Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odds. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third
short.
Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
But I was just going to start the Kellen Winslow fan club.
Dang.
Shoot. Of course, we all know what it means when you,
you
say shoot.
I thought you were going to say you had just finished applying to be a replacement ref.
That too.
Soldier.
Yeah, I guess he got called off the duty, didn't he? We welcome you inside Patriots Playbook for Thursday here on Patriots.com Radio. John Rook with Patriot Football Weekly's Eric Scalavino. Coming up in 20 minutes, Mark Gauguin from the Buffalo News, who covers the Buffalo Bills beat, will join us on the Bills. Hour number two of the program will bring in pro football gurus Russell Baxter to look through week four of the NFL season. In the meantime, the breaking news that literally happened 15 to 20 minutes ago, as was tweeted out by Adam Schefter of ESPN, is the fact that Kellen Winslow asked for and received his release from the Patriots after one game. Now, still no official statement from the team, from the Patriots, on the release of Winslow. However, there are many different ways I think we could probably go with this, Eric. You know, when you were here and you heard the news and your eyeballs bugged out a little bit.
We were making picks when
you
it
were
happened.
You were making right in the middle of the picks. So
the PFW.
What is your initial reaction here and the reasoning you think behind this? Best guess.
Best guess is that knee that has been giving him trouble for the last several years and may or may not have, you know, caused him to fail a first-time physical with this team, depending on the reports you believe, is just too much. And he gave it a go and realized that he can't play on it. That's my
even
best
guess.
Even though
he passed physical.
Even though he may have passed a physical and the Patriots were desperate to get some help in here when Hernandez went down. Let me just back up on that whole thing with the physical. I think the initial report was true that he didn't pass the physical, which is why they signed Michael Ho'omanawanui, because both of them worked out the same week, same day, maybe even. Now Winslow, when he came here, said he didn't work out for the team the first time he was here, but that doesn't necessarily mean he didn't take a physical. He says he met with the team. My guess is he didn't pass the physical initially, and for whatever reason was able to do so most recently, when after the Arizona game. But he admitted when we talked to him, you know, a couple of days after that he plays in pain constantly and has been playing in pain, and maybe at this point he's nearing 30 years old. Maybe it just finally, you know, that's probably why Seattle got rid of him. Maybe they realized that, you know, he couldn't do it. And he got here, maybe said, oh, you know, give me, you know, he was out for a few weeks. Maybe it healed up a little bit. Maybe he was able to do enough on it that he felt like he could, you know, fill in and maybe resurrect his career. But, you know, again, I'm just speculating, but that's my best guess right now is that he just can't do it.
That all, I think, makes sense, at least on the surface of it all, that it does make sense. I think it's natural, however, at this stage, for Patriots fans to wonder because of the reports that came out yesterday initially that Aaron Hernandez was seen in the locker room walking around with relative ease without a boot on his foot.
Well, let's back up on that, too.
All right.
Because the first time we saw Hernandez after Arizona, he was walking around barefoot with nothing on his injured right
ankle.
That
was right after the game.
That was the day after
the game. Day after the game.
And he was limping badly. I mean, really badly. He went to his locker, put on a boot, and then went back into the training room. The next time we saw him, which a few days later, he had the little scooter thing that we were joking about last week. And he actually rode that around on Monday in the locker room a little bit and was kind of smiling and joking around. Today we saw him again, barefoot, walking a hell of a lot better, almost like normal, back to his locker again today. And he, you know, obviously wasn't talking on the record, but made some casual small talk with people who were in the room, and certainly looked a lot better. But I don't know if you can necessarily equate that with Winslow, if the report by Schefter is true, asking for, like, the player went to the team and said, I'm tapping out. I don't know if Hernandez's health has anything to do with that. I think this is purely on Winslow.
Well, if this is purely on Winslow and Hernandez is still going to be out anywhere from 3 to 5 more weeks, or whatever it may be, then I guess the other question that certainly Patriots fans want to have answered would be one that we'll begin to have answered as well, I think, in Buffalo on Sunday, and that is, do we see more three wide as opposed to two tight end sets?
Well, I don't know, because Daniel Fells was active against Baltimore for the first time.
He was.
And now you have three healthy tight ends on the active roster: Gronk, Fells, Holm, and Awanui. If they can get away with trying some of the two tight end stuff with either Fells or the other guy, maybe they don't do it as much with three wides.
Well, they clearly found a way to target Wes Welker and also include Julian Edelman while he was in there. But, I mean, the issue of Welker, you know, not being targeted or being, you know,
marginalized,
that's a good word for it, I think has to have gone away because of what we saw this last week against Baltimore. Stands to reason, because they had success in moving the football in that fashion against Baltimore, that you would see that same type of thing against Buffalo, because Buffalo does have an improved front four. They do have a couple of bookends at defensive end that we know can get after the quarterback, and it stands to reason you lessen their effectiveness if you can get rid of the football more quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe that'll be the game plan. I still think this is a better offense with the two tight end, two wide receiver set, if they can run the ball effectively out of that. Because as we saw at Tennessee, it opens up so much. One complements the other perfectly. Now, that second tight end, Hernandez, was essentially like a third receiver in that, you know, he's one of the best pass-catching tight ends in the league. But he's also a pretty good blocker. I mean, he's not as good as Gronk, perhaps, but he can do both, which is a lot more than, say, you can't ask Wes Welker to block the way you ask Aaron Hernandez to block.
Mm-hmm.
You can't ask Edelman to block the way you ask Hernandez to block. You know what I mean? So it might not be the same type. You know, they might not be able to run and pass out of the two tight end set if Hernandez isn't in it as much as they would when he is in it. But I still would like to see more of that than just the exclusively, you know, three wide and Gronk sets.
By the way, Albert Breer of NFL Network just tweeted this. It's a really good one, too. Let me see if I can find it here again. There it is. Kellen Winslow was with the Patriots for 1 week. He earned $48,529 for 4 offensive snaps on Sunday night. Ha ha! $12,000 a snap.
Nice.
That's great money, isn't it?
Yeah.
Holy crap, that's great money. Wow.
I hate when they put it in terms like that, because it really... It hits home a little bit more, you know?
Of course it does.
When you're talking in terms of per game or per catch, and it's close to what you make per year, that's disheartening.
But you can understand how people would make that, you know, stretch, to be honest with you. Because, in effect, that's exactly what happened.
It was like our friend Shalice yesterday from the Globe did a little math with Belichick's $50,000 fine.
Right.
And the, reported salary.
Came out to about $400
for a person making $60,000 a year.
$60,000, yeah. All right. Well, it's bringing it right down to our level, though, Eric. Right down to our level, so we can understand it and feel that hurt in the pocketbook.
Oh, yeah.
Or not feel the hurt in the pocketbook, depending on how you are. All right, so that's the news of the day, certainly right off the top, and that gives us something to talk about. It gives you something to react to right off the top here, Patriots Playbook. So don't forget the email address, webradio@patriots.com. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. John.Rook on Facebook, and the Twitter feed @JRook0722. Follow along. Let us know exactly what you think, right?
Yes, I wanted to add one other thing for people to react to, if they could.
Yep.
And I want to get to the practice report a little quicker today because
Go.
2 days in a row, we don't see Logan Mankins out there.
Okay.
That's starting to become a concern for me, for his status for Sunday, for a guy who never misses practices or games, to be out 2 days in a row. We'll know for sure at 4
Eric,
o'clock.
What's the precedent here? Do you remember in recent memory him missing the last two practices or a couple of practices of a week before a game and him still playing?
Well,
when was the last time that would have happened?
The only time he ever missed a practice before he was on PUP this summer was last year. He missed one practice. I think it was a Wednesday.
Right.
Late in the year when he... when he hurt his knee against, I think it was Miami, in late in December. I think the following week he might have missed one day of practice. But the point being, the guy never misses practice. So he's never – that was the only time he'd ever missed one, was last year. Then he goes on PUP this summer, which I don't really count. But since he's come back, he practices all the time, John. And yesterday I raised a little bit of an eyebrow because he missed practice, and I thought, well, that's strange in itself. But I thought he might be back today. The fact that he wasn't has me a little bit worried that he might not be available Sunday. Now, if he's back out there tomorrow, then I'll say, well, okay, he'll tough it out. But if he's not there tomorrow, you got a problem at left guard. So I wanted to bring that up. Also, there was the report that Tom Brady was limited yesterday in practice. He returned to the injury report after almost 2 years or a year and a half not being on it.
With an injured shoulder.
Right shoulder again, limited in practice. According to our friend Mike Rodak from ESPN Boston, he saw him leaving practice early yesterday as we were leaving with the media. I did not, but he was out there today and didn't appear to leave when we left either. So that's a good sign, too. A very troubling sign, though, if he did leave when we left. Because that would mean he was limited.
Maybe he just had something else to do.
But he was on their injury report.
Okay. So maybe they allowed him to go take it. I mean, I just hate to read too much into
I know, but these are things, that facts that are out there I want people to know about. And the update from today is that he was out there and did not leave when we left.
All right. Anybody else?
Brandon Dedrick came back, which is good news for the D-line. He had an ankle injury he was dealing with. But... Edelman, Justin Francis, and obviously Hernandez remain out.
So Julian Edelman's still not available, which stands to reason again that three wide might be the rule rather than the exception, I would think.
Well, I don't know, because now you're a little bit thinner at wide receiver.
Okay.
And you are relatively healthy at tight end.
Wouldn't Matthew Slater, though, think about getting some reps at wide receiver?
I'd rather see another tight end.
A lot of confidence there for
honestly.
Eric Scalavino and Matthew Slater's
great
ability.
Guy, good special teamer. I'd rather see a tight end, though, in the passing game.
The other things that we certainly want to know about, in addition to your comments on Kellen Winslow's apparently short tenure in New England, will have to do with the game itself on Sunday afternoon in Buffalo. Need your predictions here, Patriots Nation. So, once again, webradio at patriots.com. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. John.Rook on Facebook, at jrook0722 on Twitter. You feel confident Sunday?
I do. In a win. I don't think it'll be the blowout that a lot of people are expecting, but I think they get it done. 7 to 10 points.
7 to 10?
Yeah. I think the line is 4. I think they win by 7
by
to 10.
By 7 to 10?
Yeah. I think Buffalo makes it a tough game. You know, the crowd's going to be into it. The Bills are a decent team, but I think New England wins.
Okay.
A little early for Prediction Thursday for me.
But I understand, but we want to make sure we get that out there. We do want to get that out there. Let's also then move into the other news of the day, which happened apparently in the wee hours of the morning and was announced just about as everybody was waking up on the East Coast this morning. It's the fact that we apparently have the regular officials back on the field. It's supposed to start tonight with the Thursday night Baltimore-Cleveland game.
Gene Steratore is going to be the head ref.
Gene Steratore is the only official who works National Football League games and Major College Division I basketball.
Really?
because he works Big East games, and I see him all the time.
Oh. So listen to this show and listen to yesterday's playbook, and you can put two and two together.
You'll be able to put two and two together. And here is Gene Steratore, who has volunteered his crew to be ready to go tonight. And obviously to be under quite a bit of scrutiny, I would think, for the, for the first game back for the regular officials.
I think this might be the first time ever, and we might not know if the cameras don't show it, but something tells me they will, that you'll see a stadium applaud the entrance of referees onto a football field.
You really think they will?
Yeah.
See, I think it would be just classic if they'd boo. I think it would absolutely...
That'll happen after the whistle when they make their first call. And it's against the Ravens.
You know, referees come out on the field and everybody's boo!
Right.
I'm loving
right.
that. I'm loving
false
that.
False start. Yeah. Number 78 at boo!
Actually, probably just as funny as if Steratore gives his false start, number 78, and everybody goes, screams bloody murder. Yeah, call. Yeah, you know. So I think that'll be worth the price of admission, and I just to watch and see what happens on the first couple of calls by the officiating crew. But it is, you know, still the officials, NFL Referees Association. They do need to ratify everything. It is expected that's going to happen this weekend. But at the same time, the replacement officials now are a footnote in National Football League history. A little bit early probably to look back on it, Eric, but I'm wondering just initially what you think all of this over the 3 weeks that we had in the regular season, the 4 weeks of the preseason, basically 7 weeks is what we had here of actual replacement officials on the field. Where all this fits into NFL history? How do we look back on it?
It's an interesting question because they have an 8-year deal now, which... So last year you got a 10-year player agreement.
Mm-hmm.
That means the ref's deal will be up a year before the player's deal ends, CBA ends. So you have peace on both the labor front with the players and the referees now. So ideally you should have about a decade's worth of just football, nothing to worry about business-wise. On paper, I say that, because anything can happen, you know. And the thing that bothers me, John, is that this didn't have to happen with the refs because they got essentially what we thought they were going to get all along was grandfather the pension plan in. That's essentially what they got. So starting from now on, the new guys will get 401ks.
Mm-hmm.
They got basically a practice squad of officials so that they can pull from that in case there's regular guys who aren't doing, you know, a good enough job. And there's going to be some talk about, I'm sure, I haven't read the whole thing yet, but I'm sure there's going to be talk about, you know, eventually making these, at least some of them, full-time. And they got salary raises.
Right.
So they got everything that we expected they were going to get. Why couldn't they have just done this months ago?
That's you know, when I looked at the terms of the agreement, the only thing I can even imagine that the NFL, that the referees would have to have given into. And everybody likes to look at it. First, let me preface this by saying everybody likes to look at the deal and figure out whether it's obvious or not, but figure out who won and realize that, you know, there's always a winner and a loser, even though everybody says both sides won. And then, of course, for the problem to happen anyway, both sides also lost. Fans also lost. We all lost in the deal over the course of the 7 weeks. But at the same time, who got the better end of the new deal? Because that's just the way labor agreement. There's always winners and losers in everything we do in life, right? So who won this deal if you had to, you know, put a W or an L beside it? To me, I have a hard time seeing where either side really lost.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're looking at that list of things as you just kind of talked about, I'm like going, well, that's exactly the first thing I thought of. Why the hell, if this was all agreed to,
why did it take so long?
Why did it take so long? And to me, and Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, did say this in his news conference, or at least alluded to this in his news conference earlier this afternoon. In response to the new deal, he did say that one of the things that probably kept things from being done as quickly as we all wanted them to be was that the officials wanted to be absolutely sure that they were doing the right thing. But he went out of his way to say that it was the officials that wanted to be absolutely sure that they were doing the right thing. Now, I'm not entirely...
What does that mean?
I'm not real sure. I think he wanted to make sure that, or at least... Based on my understanding of his comment, was that the referees, that the Officials Association, if you will, just wanted to make certain that they were getting the absolute best deal they could, and they did. They took their sweet time.
As far as reviewing all the language,
as far as making certain that the deals that they were getting were
in
their best interest. I don't. That nobody knows.
They had 6 months.
Because I believe that there's a certain arrogance involved from management and a certain arrogance involved from employees' point of views. And the referees being the employee in this particular instance, I get the impression that they felt like, well, we don't think the game can really continue to flourish without our involvement. Therefore, they took a hard stance. The league took a hard stance. And this is how you get impasse in all labor agreements. But then once it became clear that the league's credibility was going to be called into question because of the continuing deterioration of the way that the games were being officiated by the replacement officials, the league and the officials both decided to step up in their best interest getting this thing ironed out. Commissioner Goodell said as much when he said that they've really been in intense negotiations over the past 10 days. So the question he was asked was, did Monday night's fiasco, and I believe that was the word actually used, did Monday night's fiasco hasten the ability to reach a decision? And he said, no, not really. He said, well, certainly it plays a factor into us wanting to get a deal. But he said, we've really been in intense negotiation for the last 10 days, which tells me that they had started this. But then it's kind of like, all right, time to dot the I's and cross the T's. Let's get this done.
Yeah, I think all of week three was the impetus and was capped off by the Monday night last play of the game.
Right.
How could it not have been? You know, how could it not have been? You started to have coaches losing their cool, getting fined. Players taking to Twitter and other social media sites, losing their cool. You had Demaurice Smith putting out not so vague references to the fact that the players might strike back.
Yeah, there was some talk about them taking a knee on offensive snaps.
Yeah. So I think the league had to
do something
before this week.
Well, and that would indicate then that there was some truth to, you know, some serious negotiations taking place over the last 10 days.
Right, because you could see the deterioration in the quality.
You could see it coming before even this last weekend.
Right. So I have no reason to believe that they haven't been talking, but certainly week three, all of week three, was the final straw.
All right, we'd love to have your thoughts as well on the regular referees back in play tonight, starting with Baltimore-Cleveland and the Thursday night game on the NFL. And, of course, they'll be around for this weekend's Patriots game against Buffalo in Buffalo. Web radio at patriots.com. Our ace ticket hotline, 508-298-0398. John.Rook on Facebook, at jrook0722 on Twitter. We've got a lot to talk about, a lot to get to, and we'll begin doing that in the playbook coming up.
Hey, it's Rob Gronkowski, Pats tight end and big-time Duncan fan. The secret to my success? Coach drew up a play called Gronk, run downfield, catch ball out of air, and we give you freshly made bakery sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. I say Coach is a genius.
No defense keeps Gronk from his freshly made bakery sandwiches. Hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab your go-to sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots LLC.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
I love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football. and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards Credit Card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012 Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Pfft, rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Now is your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Patriots playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Call 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398. Now, back to your host, John Rook.
Patriots playbook for a Thursday, Buffalo Bills on Sunday. And to get more into the Bills, Mark Gaughan, who covers the Bills for the Buffalo News, joins us here in the Patriots playbook. Let me make sure that I've got the right buttons pushed here, Mark. I'm you know, you there, Mark?
I'm with you.
Thank you. It's a struggle today, trying to... A
lot of windows on that desktop.
Yeah, I got a lot of windows on this desktop here, man. You know, see, this is what happens, you know, when everybody cuts costs and they make you do everything, you just got sometimes too many buttons to push. So, anyway. First impressions of the deal between the league and the officials returning to play as soon as tonight, and of course being on the field for the game on Sunday with the Patriots and the Buffalo Bills. What was your thought, and really, what's been the Buffalo Bills' stance on this entire escapade?
Well, the Bills haven't really been affected too much from a officiating standpoint. Their first three games have been relatively uneventful. As far as the deal goes, I think everybody who watches the games is glad there's a deal. My reaction is I'm not quite sure why they couldn't have struck the same deal August 15th, but so be it. It's a done deal.
Yeah, that's exactly what we were sort of talking about. The fact is that seemed to me like just based on what the officials got out of this deal, it's amazing how this could not have happened this summer as opposed to happening, you know, a month deep into the regular season. But be that as it may, it's done. The regular officials are back on the field this week. There will still be blown calls. There will still be missed opportunities. There will still be fans getting upset with officials. There will still be players and coaches alike getting upset at calls, and there will be red flags thrown out on the field. Nothing's going to really change other than the fact that we seem to know that the guys that will be out there making those calls are a little bit better, shall we say, equipped to make those calls. So I loved, in fact, in your lead today where you mentioned that the last time the Patriots lost three straight games, Bills cornerback Stephen Gilmore was 12 years old. That's a long time. That's a long time.
It's a decade ago.
It's a long time. Let me jump back. Unofficial Bills fans, but you'll be glad to know, still are upset over that game in Foxborough in 98 when the Pats scored on the final play and running the extra point in against no defense.
Yes.
But anyway, I digress.
Yes, no. I can understand that. I mean, the Patriots have certainly been right there and had their share of bad calls go their way in the past as well. Something called the tuck rule certainly comes to mind, and whether it's bad or a good call is really obviously a moot point now. But the same, however you want to look at it, officiating is as imperfect a science as there ever was. And suffice to say, at least it looks like we can get back to some sense of normalcy. So where it is concerned, where the Bills and the Patriots are for this Sunday, the Patriots, you'd think, would have their backs a little bit more to the wall than Buffalo going into this weekend. Would you agree with that?
Well, absolutely. The Patriots bounced back from defeats. Well, they've barely even had two game losing streak. Now they've lost to two pretty good teams.
We'll see how.
I think it'll be interesting to watch how good the Pats defense is. You know, they spent the offseason working on improving it, and it looks like they have made some improvements without a doubt. And just, you know, how much better is it? Obviously, the Pats defense had nowhere to go but up from last year.
That's very, very true. As you mentioned, fourth time in the last decade that New England has lost back-to-back games, so it hasn't happened often. How do you feel like that might have changed what Chan Gailey and some of the players are saying this week in terms of their preparation for the Patriots?
Yeah, I don't think it changes much of what they were saying. I mean, the specter of the Patriots looms over Buffalo, in a huge way. Even though the Bills snapped the 15-game losing streak at the start of last year, the Bills see the Patriots as the team to beat.
How much, Mark, are the Bills better on defense now with not only Mario Williams but the guy that Buffalo took from New England, Mark Anderson?
Yeah, I think they're a lot better. How good are they? I don't know. But, I mean, again, like the Patriots pass defense, the Bills run defense had nowhere to go but up. So they definitely are vastly improved. That makes the third down defense better and everything else better. No team defense has a really good matchup against the Patriots, but they're a lot. This is a lot better. In the past, the Bills just couldn't stop the run, and so the teams were always in third and short. So that hurt the third down defense, and so it's a totally different. I'm not saying the Bills have a top 10 defense. They got to prove it, but they're a lot better than they've been.
Well, I guess what I'm driving at more is Tom Brady in any danger this weekend?
Well, I mean. Yeah, the Bills have a good front four. I mean, their tackles are really good and have been. But I think, the presence of two legitimate defensive ends makes Kyle Williams better. Kyle Williams is a good player at defensive tackle. Marcel Darius is a good player. So the middle three of the Pats O-line, has a tougher challenge. You got Mankins there who's a rock, but maybe.
Yeah, we're not sure if we're going to have him or not, to be quite honest with you. He's missed the last 2 days.
Yeah, they're the guys on the injury report. They always show up playing usually. Anyway, I think the Bills' good defensive tackles are better this year because, you have to pick who. You can't double-team everybody. Mm-hmm. And really, they have four quality defensive linemen.
Other than the obvious ones at end and at tackle, who else, in your estimation, has stood out that maybe was a little bit more unexpected defensively for this Buffalo team, in your estimation?
I think middle linebacker Kelvin Shepherd has had a really good start to the season. I think, and so that's the strength of the Bills' defense. They have young corners, so that would be a question of, how will their corners hold up. Stephon Gilmore, start first-round pick, a rookie, 10th overall pick, is a good player, has played pretty well, but he's a rookie, so rookies are going to get beat. It's just the way it is. He got beat for a touchdown in week one and last week, but he's been mostly solid. So he's going to have his ups and downs, but he's already shown he's a pretty good player. And then, on the other corner, they kind of rotate Aaron Williams and Terrence McGee. Terrence McGee is a steady veteran, solid. Aaron Williams, again, is a former second-round pick and who has talent, but he's got to prove himself. So we'll see.
Flipping it over to the other side of the ball, Mark, and again, Mark Gaughan from the Buffalo News joining us here in the Patriots playbook. On the other side, we understand that at least it looks like Fred Jackson will play on Sunday, but then saw a couple of reports where C.J. Spiller has actually been participating in practices as well. In your estimation, is it possible that he might see some time?
Well, it's not a given that Fred Jackson is going to play either. He's practicing. We'll see. I think if Jackson plays, I think he's not going to play every down. I think he's going to be limited in the game if he plays. Spiller is doing some work out there. I'd be surprised if he plays.
He was out at practice today?
Yes, he was.
Okay.
In pads, full pads and the helmet, but he's going to be limited today.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Tashard Choice, though, did come in and play, it seemed like, relatively well last week. So I'm assuming then the Buffalo feels like, even if Choice is the choice, so to speak, at tailback, that Buffalo feels like they can be just as effective.
Well, yeah, I don't think just as effective, but they can be effective.
Okay.
I think their two best offensive weapons are Jackson and Spiller. So make no mistake, the Pats are getting a break this week, even if Jackson plays limited. Now, obviously the Bills are getting a big break because Hernandez isn't playing. So, it goes both ways. But, the Bills' two best offensive weapons are Jackson and Spiller, or Spiller and Jackson.
Certainly seems that way just from some of the numbers that we've seen put up. This team has had an unbelievable start to its seasons over the last couple of years in the month of September. In fact, I read yesterday where they actually lead the NFL in scoring in September over the last 2 years. What are your thoughts toward Buffalo being able to do that, number one, and number two, not being able to perhaps sustain it as much? Does it all go back to injuries that have plagued this team, or is there something else?
I think it's... last year had a lot to do with injuries and partly due with Fitzpatrick taking too many chances and a little bit of inconsistency in his mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
And a bad defense. Let me put that first on the list. But their defense is better. And really, I don't know, as you guys probably have talked about, the AFC gets the easier crossovers this year. With the AFC South and the NFC West. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's easier than playing the NFC East.
Right.
And so really, whoever is the second best team to New England in the AFC East should get a wild card this year, I think. Whether it's the Bills or the Jets, that team should get a wild card berth. And if they don't, they've blown an opportunity.
Kind of a weird question because I know that he's not really mentioned much in terms of a position, but who's going to punt for Brian Moorman?
A guy named Sean Powell.
Okay.
Who was first team All-America at Florida State last year, and he played all training camp and preseason in Buffalo. So they brought him in to punt.
Was that a surprise to you that Moorman was cut?
It was the timing. If they had cut him at the end of the regular preseason, I wouldn't have been shocked because it was clear they were, they liked Powell and Moorman was in the last year of his deal and they were kind of looking to who they were going to move on to. But, 3 weeks in, that was a little surprising.
Okay. Final question then from me, Mark. One of the areas that I'm looking at in terms of matchups for Sunday that I think certainly could be a real problematic point for the Patriots, especially if a guy like Logan Mankins is not really able to go or certainly isn't full health, would be on the offensive line, where a guy like conceivably Dan Connolly could line up against one of those young defensive tackles that you were talking about in Marcell Dareus. Do you see a matchup on either side of the ball for Buffalo? You feel like, hey, if the Bills can somehow win this matchup, that should put them at least in good shape to try to come out with a win at home?
Well, I think that the Bills have been, besides being woefully undermanned at quarterback for the past decade in comparison to the Patriots, the Bills have been beaten on the line of scrimmage most of the past decade by the Patriots. And I don't think that is going to be the case this week. I think the Bills on the line, I think the Bills' offensive line is better than the Patriots' offensive line. And I think the Bills' defensive front is, you know, close to the Patriots' defensive front seven, which is very good. So I think that's even. Now, you know, the matchup that obviously is the most important is, you know, not necessarily head-to-head, but Brady and Fitzpatrick, and certainly, you know, when you got Tom Brady, that's an ace in the hole.
Very good. Mark, thanks for the time today. We appreciate it, and I'm sure we will we'll catch up again soon.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. You bet. Mark Gaughan, Buffalo News, covering the Buffalo Bills. Surprised at anything that he had to say about Buffalo at all?
That the fact that he focused more on Mario Williams and Mark Anderson being run stuffing,
yeah,
was a little
as opposed to
you know, the first thing he mentioned was they're helping stop the run. I don't think that's why they were brought in there.
No, I mean,
that was the first thing he mentioned about
one of the reasons why Buffalo, though, is obviously, you know, not really looked at a whole lot of blitzing as well, because they're hoping that their front four can handle.
Yeah,
you know, the pressure.
Well, I guess so. I just, when I think of those two guys, I'm thinking getting to the quarterback.
To me, the battle at all this week has to do, and especially as I just said, if Mankins is less than 100% or doesn't go at all, has to do with the Patriots' offensive line and their ability to keep Brady clean and protected this week.
Right.
When you know that Buffalo is vastly improved at the corners, at the edges, defensively.
Exactly, which is why I was surprised he didn't really make a big deal about that with those two guys. I know he said that it helps the tackles because, you know, when you have two good ends, the tackles benefit from it. But
well, that's going to put a lot of strain on a guy like Connolly, as I mentioned, because he's not going to get a lot of double-team help if Dareus is having a hell of a day.
Yeah.
In fact,
right,
he's not going to get any double-team. So that means that, and I would expect that if the tackles are occupied, whether or not they're able to keep the ends away or not, Buffalo's going to do their damage in the middle.
Yeah.
Conceivably, if there's one-on-one back there.
Right.
Which also could lessen, in theory, the effectiveness of a guy like Gronk, who Brady has already said he wants to try to find more, that he didn't find enough last week against Baltimore. But if Buffalo's putting that pressure on up the middle, who's going to be out of the offense in order to come back and block?
Yeah, it's a good point. And, you know, maybe they have to run the ball a little bit more to the outside.
That's kind of what I think. I think you got to. I personally look at the game plan. If I was trying to figure it out myself, I'm tacking those edges. I'm getting the ball out in space. I'm trying to cut the corner, and I'm trying to lessen the effectiveness of guys like Anderson and Williams on the edge because they know that something's coming at them.
And stay away from the middle.
Stay away from the middle. So that's kind of what I'm thinking, because I think you're going to have your hands full with the middle, and so because you're going to have your hands full of the middle, and you're liable to have your hands full at the end, run right at them. You know, it's the old adage in football, Eric. You know this as well as anybody. You run right at somebody's strength a lot of the times, because quite frankly, the opposition you're running at doesn't realize that's what you're doing, or they're caught off guard by what you're trying to do. Now, Buffalo will undoubtedly adjust at some point. The question is, can the Patriots readjust? Mm. And we haven't seen a lot of solid readjustment in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. That's a problem.
We just haven't.
I know. That's a problem. And
yet you still think the Patriots are going to kick ass this week.
I said 7-10. But that's not exactly kicking ass. Three touchdowns is kicking ass.
Oh, well, okay. Whatever. It's a matter of semantics.
Put words in my mouth.
Matter of semantics. To me, as I looked at it and I tried to examine it over the course of the last day or so, I'm like, damn, you know, that's not going to be easy to mess with, especially if Mankins is out.
Yeah.
That's just not going to be easy.
No, that's why I think it's going to be in that margin. That's a close margin to me.
I'm thinking more high scoring. I thought last week's would be relatively low scoring.
Yeah, so did I.
I predicted 23-21.
Yeah.
And even before kickoff, I was thinking more like 17-16.
Yeah.
But it turned out to be 31-30.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking that this game on Sunday is probably going to be in that 35-28, 35-30 range, somewhere in that range.
Wow. Okay.
I'm giving Buffalo a lot of credit for offense.
And not a lot of credit on defense.
No, because I think the Patriots will be.
I mean New England's defense.
Oh, New England's defense?
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. I'm not. I think what we saw in the first couple of weeks is great, but I think what we saw last week was a step back, and I think what we're going to see is a little bit of a struggle to get back to that threshold we saw in the first couple of weeks of the season. I don't think the Patriots' defense is as good as we saw against Tennessee or Arizona, but I don't think it's as bad as we saw against Buffalo, simply because Buffalo does have a pretty decent offense, you know, and I think Joe Flacco is certainly...
Against Baltimore.
I mean, Baltimore. I'm thinking that, you know, Flacco has come into his own a little bit, and we need to give that guy some credit.
Yeah.
I think we need to give those receivers, Torrey Smith especially, a lot of credit for what they were able to do last Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
The Patriots are being given a gift if Jackson is limited and Spiller is out. There's no doubt about that. That's a gift. As Mark Gaughan did say, well, yeah, the Buffalo is being given a gift because there's no Aaron Hernandez, but who gets the better gift? And I think that's really what it's going to boil down to here. Which team is going to be able to overcome its loss here in week four? And so that's why right now I kind of lean toward the Patriots by about seven.
Yeah. Okay, I'm with you.
In that instance, I'm going to give you my prediction. I usually wait at the end of the show, but I'm going to say 35-28, Pats.
35-28?
Yep.
All right. I'll stick with 30-23
New England?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, do they score late, or does Buffalo score late and make it close?
No, I think New England scores late.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So you think the Patriots?
It's like 24-23. So the
Patriots,
something like that,
Patriots are back and forth. They're on the they're on the cusp, and they score late to finally clinch this one, like they were not able to do against Baltimore.
Yeah.
Interesting. Melvin in Tennessee, you're in the playbook. Hey, Melvin.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good, man.
Pretty good. Well, I just got through listening, I guess, to you all. So I guess I can give my prediction. I think it'll be about 28-21. I guess I kind of agree more with Eric. I don't think that Buffalo's going to be able to score that many points. I mean, it took Baltimore everything they had to put up 31 points. So I really think it'll be, I think they can control them to their normal 20 points a game type, range. But one of the things I was thinking about earlier today was, how much do you think this team misses Robert Gallery now? You know, it was kind of I kind of didn't pay too much attention when it happened. I was like, well, I knew maybe Brian Waters would be back to fill that role. But now with both of those gone and with these offensive line problems, and you all just said with Conley now having to go against those deep tackles, how much, if Robert Gallery was here or his flexibility with tackle and guard, do you think that would be a big increase for the Patriots or not, based on what you've seen?
He was here for such a short time, though. We never really got to see much out of him to know. I mean, he looked okay to me in training camp drills. I didn't think he was, except for the last image I have of him getting knocked to his ass by Vince Wilfork with one arm.
Mm.
Aside from that, he didn't really look out of place, but obviously he felt he couldn't do it anymore. So,
okay.
If a guy's at that point in his career, I don't think he's going to help you very much. So, I'd rather they have guys who maybe aren't as good or as, flexible, but are healthy and are available. Not that the depth they have right now is all that healthy either.
mm-hmm.
At the position. So they're in a tenuous situation on the O-line right now.
Okay. And with Mankins being out again,
yeah, makes it worse.
That's a big issue. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been able to stay on the field consistently for, you know, the last couple of years. But whenever he's on the field, it's a big difference.
He played all last year.
He played all last year on an injured bad knees. So if he's not able to go, then you have to have, I think, some concern.
He's been on the field, Melvin, for the whole time. The only time he missed was this camp with PUP.
Right. So that's why I'm saying if he doesn't go this week, there's something really wrong. I mean, either that or maybe it's just that, you know, what he had to go through to rehab and do what he did last year to be able to play, maybe it's just not quite all the way that it needs to be. Maybe he needs another week. Who knows? We don't really know. I guess that story will eventually be told, especially once we see the dress list come out for this weekend, and we'll begin to surmise, well, what the deal is. Because I think it'd have to be something really, really strong to keep Logan Mangus off the field. Mm.
Yeah, okay. Well, I wouldn't say that he was like a, you know, Shane Vereen or anything like that, but I know like towards the end of the year, like the Miami and Buffalo games, he started having, you know, I started seeing him listed as questionable or, you know, just
right.
health issues, you know, so I wasn't saying that.
Right. He was on the list quite a bit. Hey, Melvin, what are your thoughts on Kellen Winslow being released?
With that raises a huge concern for me. You know, I don't know if they think that, you know, I can't pronounce his name. Hunama, you know.
We'll let Eric do it for you.
Ho'omanawanui. Yeah.
There you go. Ho'omanawanui. There you go.
Perfect. Yeah. I don't know if they feel more confident in him. But when we run this two tight end, I don't see why you would release a player like that, because I felt like, you know, he's a good fit for Aaron Hernandez. I'm a big Madden player, so he's fantastic for me on the game. But you know, just fitting in that role, I thought that he worked out well. But like I said, maybe I think that Hernandez is, you know, coming along better than he thought. And you know, Winslow's kind of a big headed guy. You know, he's real. So I wouldn't think that he wants to play second up or backup to anybody too. So I think he asked for a release. I just felt that he just, you know, didn't fit in or didn't feel appreciated like he was getting the normal treatment in Miami or all the other teams he was with.
I can understand based on his personality character that we've seen over the last few years how someone might think that. But as we talked about this earlier in the hour, we kind of surmise here that there's probably a little bit more to Kellen Winslow's knee troubles than we were led to believe, even though he passed a physical. Fact of the matter is that he probably did not feel as if he could play at the level to which he's used to playing, that, you know, the grind was going to be a little bit too much for him, especially having gone through it for a week. And I would be really surprised if Kellen Winslow played another down in the NFL. Looks like he might be done at age 29.
Wow, I didn't know to that extent.
That's just what we're thinking, because, I mean, here's an opportunity for him to come in and play on a team that's going to contend for a title, which a guy like, you know, Kellen Winslow wanted to do to begin with, and he's also been very vocal about that in his career. And and this was a perfect opportunity for him to come in and fit in and contribute. And if he asked for his release, tells me that he's got enough pride, at least, to say, you know what, I can't do this. This isn't right. I'm going to take the high road and leave now. And frankly, if that is the case, I give the dude a lot of credit.
Yeah, if that's true.
If that's right, then I agree. But as far as Josh McDaniels goes, I just hope from that viewpoint, that he can adjust back to the receivers type offense based on receivers, and we won't need him, you know, and we can transition from that two tight end offense. To running more, you know, seeing more. Lloyd did fantastic the last game. It seemed like they got going.
Right.
Welker, same way. Branch looked like not too much different. So if we can just get back to the receiver, you know, to that receiver and good running attack or a decent running attack, I think it'll be fine. But, you know, we need Gronk to be doing more than blocking if we're going to beat some of these teams coming up.
Absolutely. No question about that. Melvin, thank you for the phone call. Sure appreciate it. Melvin in Tennessee. All right, E, so you say the Patriots by 7.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll find out how well you predict next Tuesday, as we always do.
Next Wednesday. When I'm here.
Wednesday. Yes. Yeah. When you're here. Because you have
Tuesdays
off.
You can make fun of me on Tuesday.
I'll make fun of you on Tuesday.
Wrong.
Yeah, I'll make fun of you on Tuesday if you get it wrong. But then again, I don't think anybody's going to be in a making fun of mood.
I'll be stunned if they lose 3 straight. I will. I'll okay. be stunned if they lose three
All
straight.
Right. Eric Scalavino, Patriots Football Weekly. Let's take a timeout, and we'll get into the playbook with Russell Baxter coming up.
Hey, it's Rob Gronkowski, Pat's tight end and big-time Duncan fan. The secret to my success? Coach drew up a play called Gronk, run downfield, catch ball out of air, and we give you freshly made bakery sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. I say Coach is a genius.
No defense keeps Gronk from his freshly made bakery sandwiches. Hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab your go-to sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
I love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice. And football. And baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012, Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio.
Thanks, Nelly. Indeed, you are. It's hour number two inside the Playbook for a Thursday on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook, and at this time each and every week, we welcome in our own pro football guru, Russell Baxter, profootballguru.com, coldhardfootballfacts.com, bleacherreport.com. Mr. Baxter, good day to you, sir.
Good day to you, Mr. Rook. How is life treating you?
So far, so good. A lot better as a pro football fan. As we know, the news of the day has the regular, with quotation marks put around that word, regular officials back to work tonight for Ravens-Browns.
Interesting symmetry. 25 years ago, we saw replacement players for 3 weeks.
Yes, we did.
And now we just saw replacement referees for 3 weeks.
We just talked about that, myself and Eric Scalavino. We just kind of alluded to the fact that it was, you know, back in 87 during that work stoppage, it was 3 weeks that we saw the replacements. And, of course, there's been movies made and, you know, there's we've sort of waxed poetic. Yes, but we've sort of waxed poetic was my point about what happened 35 years ago or 25 years ago, I should say. So because of that, 25 years from now, Russell, what do you think the legacy will be for these replacement refs? How will we look back on this stretch?
We'll be dealing with a replacement cheerleader.
Oh, no.
For a three-week stretch.
No.
No? Okay.
Heavens no. Let's hope that does not happen.
Replacement owners? I had to think of something. So.
Obviously, yeah.
Well, I think what we're going to think of is just another chapter in, you know, this the history of the NFL. And, you know what's really funny is last night on Twitter, I actually tweeted out a couple times about the symmetry part that I just discussed. And, you know, a lot of people, or I shouldn't say a lot of people, that's, you know, whatever it is, but I think some people think that the Keanu Reeves movie was simply a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And don't really realize that there actually were replacement games where players in the last couple weeks began to cross the picket line.
That's right.
I have a couple of funny memories. I don't know if you remember, the first Monday night game of the replacement games was actually the 49ers against the Giants at the Meadowlands. The 49ers wind up winning. And late in the game, the 49ers, I think, ran the wishbone or something to that effect. And there was a great shot of Bill Walsh looking over at Bill Parcells and putting his hands up like, what do you want me to do? Okay? And it was... It's actually kind of comical, but there was also, I'm sure you remember the story of Steve Largent,
mm-hmm.
Who had crossed the picket line and caught something like 14 or 15 passes in a half,
mm-hmm.
and then yanked himself out of the game because he did not want to break the NFL record.
In a replacement game, right.
In a replacement game.
Yep,
and then
I think
my favorite story is one of my old magazines that I had, Prologue, which the NFL used to put out. It was a great, great recap of the season every year with pictures and stats and. And there's a photo in there, and it was the last game before the regular players were coming back. And here was a young man who looked, I can't tell if he was an offensive or defensive lineman, getting Joe Montana's autograph in the locker room.
Wow.
One of his teammates, Joe Montana. Now, it wasn't just a fan. Here was one of Joe's teammates getting an autograph from him.
Love
hey,
it.
I'm leaving on my way. Do you think you could sign this for him? I mean, just funny stuff. But, of course, as we know, some of those replacement players wound up sticking,
mm-hmm.
like an Eric Kramer. Obviously, I don't really count the guys who crossed the picket line. There were some notable people, by the way. Remember the Cowboys, Too Tall Jones and Randy White and Tony Dorsett, and so on. And there also was a quarterback, I believe the Bears, by the name of Sean Payton.
Hmm. Really?
Yeah, who I believe was the Bears' replacement.
No kidding. That's a good one.
If memory serves me correctly.
That's a good one. I like it. Before we move on and start looking at the games themselves, which we'll have some regular officials back in the field for, our own Paul Perillo from PFW just tweeted just a matter of minutes ago that Robert Kraft has been named among the 24 contributors nominated as part of the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2013.
Nice.
Which is you know, well deserved. I think most Patriots fans would certainly agree to that. But I just thought we can't let that go by without saying something about that, because quite frankly, the contributions that Mr. Kraft has made, and we were talking about it on the program here yesterday, Russell. You know, how do we solve this problem between the referees and the NFL? And it's going to take probably leadership from the ownership group, guys like Kraft and Jerry Jones, to maybe step up and get it done, and who knows how influential they might have been.
Well, you know, Mr. Kraft's contributions over the last—I would say even over the last year and a half. If you remember last year, after the lockout got settled, you know, I believe I suggested to you that Robert Kraft be Sportsman of the Year for Sports Illustrated.
Right.
And I didn't get it right.
No.
but yeah, it was just how I feel about the work he's done.
Sure.
And so on. So it's great. I'm excited about tonight because now we can all scrutinize the other officials.
Right.
And within a week, I'm sure there will be some fans calling for the replacements again.
Undoubtedly. That may happen before this game is even over tonight. So let's kind of start with that one. The Ravens are coming off the big emotional win. Last second field goal, was it good? Was it not good win over the Patriots on Sunday night? And then they get to come right back and play on Thursday. So they've had the shortest possible of work weeks this week, even though they do get to go home. But the Browns are 0-3 coming in. And Baltimore is... Geez, I've seen double-digit favorite in this one. You know, is there a shot for the Browns tonight?
Well, I think there's a shot. I don't know if it's a really good one, unfortunately, because of their recent history.
Yeah.
You got to consider some long streaks here. First off, you include the playoffs last year against Houston. The Ravens have won 13 in a row at home. They've also beaten the Browns 8 straight times. The Browns have lost. I don't think they'll realize they lost their last 6 games last year. They're currently riding a 9-game overall losing streak, and they've lost their last 8 road games. And they've also lost their last 11 divisional games.
Mm.
Now, as you can see, I really pumped up the Browns during that segment.
Yeah, you did.
You know what's funny about Baltimore is they're a different kind of Baltimore now. They are not defensive reliant. They're a little more offensive reliant. And we saw 503 total yards last week, by the way, by the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
You usually don't see that. And, of course, the week before, we saw the Eagles come back and put about 480 on the board against the Ravens. So this is a Raven team that can score a little more, but they're also going to give up a little more. And I think the Browns will have their moments. I don't think their pass rush without Suggs is overly potent, but I just think there's too many ways. The one thing about the Browns, you'll see some good defensive numbers with them, especially when it comes to the pass, but a lot of it also are their struggles against the run. And Ray Rice ate them alive last year, I believe, in the one game in Cleveland, and I just don't see anything different tonight.
Okay. Within the AFC East this weekend, some real intriguing matchups, and I'm not necessarily talking about the Patriots at the Bills. The Jets are at home against the San Francisco 49ers, minus Darrelle Revis. How much will his loss impact this team overall, in your estimation?
Well, it's going to obviously somewhat limit what they can do or what Rex Ryan likes to do, because when you have one player who can basically, you know, take a side out or take the best receiver out, which is what they like to do with Darrelle Revis, I mean, you know, shades of other defensive backs, I mean, in this league. I mean, you know, Sanders, you know, they said that he could take one side of the field
mm-hmm.
out. So, I mean, obviously it changes things that you want to do. And it's now, you know, do the 49ers have the kind of team that attack downfield that much? And maybe this is the week they kind of do it. I mean, they're still their best pass option in terms of scoring is Vernon Davis, the tight end.
Right.
And I will say, tight ends usually have their share of success against these 3-4 defenses. But I'll tell you one thing about the Jets. They've got a pretty potent safety duo back there with LaRon Landry and Jeremiah Bell. You know, Jeremiah Bell, who was in the AFCs for a long time, leading the Dolphins in tackles almost every year.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Niners got a little bit of a wake-up call last week, as everybody should. You wonder why teams don't go undefeated in this league. It's tough week in and week out. I believe I heard somewhere that they did not go back to San Francisco. They stayed out somewhere in Ohio, just like they did last year when they played the Bengals and the Eagles,
mm-hmm.
I believe, in back-to-back weeks. So this will be interesting. I'm not going to be surprised to get some heat on Alex Smith. I'm going to be interested to see how the Jets actually move the ball. Everybody's talking about Revis, but can the Jets run the ball with the same success that Minnesota had last week? And I don't know if San Francisco lays a defensive egg 2 weeks in a row. So I think I have to lean toward the Niners, but I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, this is this is clash of styles here, and I don't know if Revis not being around this week is necessarily the killer that it would be in other weeks.
You've got the Falcons, you've got the Texans, you've got the Cardinals, all at 3-0, which to me is a little strange in its own right. But the Cardinals are at home against the other AFC East team in the Miami Dolphins. And Arizona, as we know, much better than advertised, certainly on the defensive side of the ball. Patriots learned that the hard way the last couple of weeks, 2 weeks ago. And then they basically destroyed Philadelphia last week. So is this Cardinals team for real, and is Miami getting ready to find that out?
Well, you go back to this stretch that they're on. Remember a year ago, The Cardinals started out 1-6. And since that 1-6 start, John, they're 10-2. In that 10 wins, they've actually beaten the Eagles twice. They beat the Eagles at Philly last year. Came back and beat them late in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
We already know they beat New England. They beat Dallas last year. They beat San Francisco last year. So, yeah, and I think their confidence is growing, especially on defense. They're not quarterback reliant. The big issue with them this year was the offensive line. An amazing turnaround has been the confidence of Kevin Cobb. Here was a guy who really got pounded around during the preseason. I was in Canton for the game where he actually got hurt in the preseason early on. The offensive line for the Cardinals is suspect, to say the least, and they don't have Levi Brown this year.
Mm-hmm.
But he had to come off the bench to save them against Seattle. And I think everybody waited for him to implode after John Skelton got hurt. And instead, he took over in the middle of a drive, John, and led them down the field to what turned out to be the winning touchdown. And since then, he's played pretty good football. And last week against Philadelphia, that was the sharpest I saw him since he started a game for the Eagles against Atlanta in Philadelphia about 3 or 4 years ago. And he looked like he was going to be the contender for the starting job. So sometimes maybe just something happens to turn things around. Now, I didn't put Kevin Cobb in Canton or even in the Pro Bowl. I'm just saying that he looks like he's gotten his confidence back, which what it looked like he had lost during the summer.
I would tend to agree. I would also tell you that one of the things that impresses me the most is that I keep wanting to say St. Louis. God forgive me, please.
I know,
it's unbelievable.
And it was Jim Hart.
Yes, it was Jim Hart. That's exactly right, Jim Hart at quarterback. The one thing that impresses me the most about Arizona is the fact that they're doing this, even though Larry Fitzgerald is a significant factor at all, they don't necessarily rely on him to the point where they don't have anything else. I mean, I've seen, you know, he's got, 14 grabs, I think, through the first 3 weeks, which sounds like a lot, but it doesn't seem like they've overly targeted him. In other words, there are other guys on this team picking up the slack, and Kevin Cobb is managing the game to the point where he's doing what I think a lot of people hoped he could do even before he got to Arizona.
You know what's interesting is, you know, divisions take on personalities. And you think about at least the three top teams in the NFC West. They are Seattle, Arizona, San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
They're not all quarterback driven. They're more defensive driven. And it's about not making mistakes. And, sometimes game manager, which I know is two words, actually gets the connotation of being a four-letter word.
Right.
And game manager to me is all 32 quarterbacks are game managers. They just manage different kinds of games. Okay, the bottom line is that they are supposed to be in control. So whether you're throwing 52 times or you're throwing 22 times, it's about execution. Every team plays a different way. If every team played the exact same way, either it would be 70-70 or 0-0.
Yeah.
That would be kind of boring. And look what Arizona has done. You know, when they beat New England, they got 4 sacks. They get a block a punt that sets up a touchdown. Against Philadelphia, they run back a fumble. James Sanders. They forced 3 fumbles, 2 by Michael on Michael Vick.
Mm-hmm.
They've gotten, I want to say, they have 13 or 14 sacks already this year. They've had at least 3 sacks in every game. They actually had a pretty respectable pass rush year. Last year they had 42 sacks. And, you know, keep an eye, this kid, Darrell Washington, who led them in tackles last year, right now leading them in tackles, leads them in sacks,
right.
Inside linebacker. You know, he's having one of those starts that, you know, when you're filling out your Pro Bowl ballots down the road, you're going to remember the way he played.
He had everything that moved 2 weeks ago against New England.
Well, and that's why New England didn't move.
No kidding.
Yeah.
No kidding. I was very impressed with Washington 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. They've got a lot of good young defensive players. And you know what it is? We're not used to seeing in the Cardinals' heyday, you know, we kid about the 1974 in the NFC East. When they were last 3-0.
Mm-hmm.
But as you remember that team, Terry Metcalf.
Yes, thank you very much.
Mel Gray.
Yes.
Jim Otis.
Yes.
A magnificent offensive line with Conrad Dobler and Dan Dierdorf, and I'm missing some guys in there. I mean, that, and people forget who the head coach is because he was so associated with the San Diego Chargers for so long.
Mm-hmm.
But that was Don Coryell.
Don Coryell, yes, yes.
Okay?
Yes.
They won the NFC East back-to-back years, 74 and 75.
And beat some pretty good Cowboys teams to do it, too.
Absolutely. And now, of course, along the way here, the more recent addition to the Cardinals, especially went to the Super Bowl, all we thought about was Kurt Warner and Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin. Okay? So now we have a Cardinal team based on defense. And I think it's not something people grasp. You know, we have very firm memories of a lot of things. It's actually in some ways like the Ravens. We remember the Ravens defense carrying them into a large part in that Super Bowl when they beat the Giants. We don't ever think of the Ravens as an offensive-laden team. But right now, they might be more geared toward offense as their defense goes through an adjustment period.
Two other games with two other teams undefeated this weekend. Panthers at the Falcons, and you've got the Titans at the Texans. Of the two games, which undefeated team is most likely to lose?
I think I probably have to lean toward Atlanta, although they have kind of owned
Carolina
at the plate. They're playing, you're talking about efficient football, one turnover in three games.
Yeah.
They're already plus 10 in the differential. They've got 11 takeaways. Again, here's another team that has changed its personality a little. Michael Turner a little bit on the, back burner, not to make a bad rhyme, but it just worked out that way. funny enough, though, usually when he plays Carolina, he eats them alive. And, judging by the way Carolina played defense last week against the Giants, and they couldn't stop Andre Brown, I wouldn't be surprised if Atlanta attacked them a little differently. Opposed to the way they played the first 3 weeks when they were a charter member of the AFC West for the beginning of the season and, swept the Chiefs and the Broncos and the Chargers and beat two of them on the road. They're playing very, very effective football. Julio Jones has been a big pickup for them. It's what they wanted to do. But, I think every once in a while you're going to see Atlanta go back to what we saw, the first couple of years under Mike Smith, and this might be one of those weeks.
I hesitate to include this game, but the fact that the Saints and Packers are playing each other, two teams that were thought to be, contenders in the NFC, and yet the Saints are 0-3 and the Packers are 1-2, and who knows how much they're reeling after what happened to them on Monday night. But I'm wondering if there will be any sort of hangover for Green Bay, and I'm wondering if the Saints haven't had a terminal hangover for the first 3 weeks of the year.
Well, it's funny, there's two teams that were 28-4 last year.
Yep.
Now they're 1-5.
I know. That's why I had to bring it up because wow.
Well, listen, what's funny is it's 0-3 and 1-2, and you make a case it's the game that people are most interested in this week, to be honest with you, because you're talking about two teams that were recent Super Bowl champions. So, we're not used to seeing – obviously we're not used to seeing the Saints this way. They haven't started out this way in 5 years. The Packers lost one game all last year in the regular season. They've already lost two. And it's going to be interesting because I also think Mike McCarthy did a tremendous job of not wasting any time accepting the fact that they lost the game. Okay? There's nothing we can do. He knows what he's in for. He's got a short week to get ready for an explosive team. Packers defense has played a lot better this year, but their offense has been a little stymied. 57 points in three games. We saw the Packers score at least 46 times last year, John.
Mm-hmm.
So to be held to 19 points a game is a little stunning. But here's the biggest difference about these teams right now. The Packers obviously not playing the kind of football they played last year. And who do they turn to right the ship? Of course, it's Mike McCarthy.
Right.
And here are the Saints, 0-3. They've already lost as many games as they did all last year. And the Saints are turning to... Who exactly are they turning to?
Oh, in terms of their
head coaches?
Thank you.
And that's my point.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we don't really know.
Yeah. And that's even the bigger point. This was a team, and you hear it all the time, because sometimes we look at schedules so like they're college football. Well, we'll get well this week against Florida International. Just throwing the school out there. They're at home against the Kansas City Chiefs, who had also not won a game and blew an 18-point lead. And it just shows you, if you're not playing well, especially if you're not playing well on defense, you can cure a lot of other teams' ills. Okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, let me throw out a real quick stat on you here.
Sure.
The New Orleans Saints are averaging less than 25 minutes a game time of possession.
Wow.
Now, I'm not a big time of possession guy, but when an other team has the ball 10 more minutes than you do, that's eye-opening. And opposing teams have already run the ball 129 times against the Saints. That's an easy 43 times a game. So you wondering why they don't have the ball? And then when they do get the ball, they look frantic? You know, case closed.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. And it's, I can't say it's stunningly surprising only because you have a strange situation, unprecedented situation, and you have a new defensive coordinator trying to put in a new system mm-hmm. without the regular head coach there.
Okay.
I'm sorry. This idea that Drew Brees signed his contract and everything was going to be right, still mystifying to me. I didn't know he was going to have to be the defensive coordinator too.
See, yeah, we remember when right after he signed his deal, or it was not too far after he signed his deal, mm-hmm. you know, that's when the Saints came here to practice with the Patriots during during training camp time, and there was a lot of talk from amongst the New Orleans media at the time how things are going to be back to normal, how this is going to be business as usual for the Saints, and it didn't really address, at least at the time, they didn't really address the issues that this team might still have, not only with players missing or with injuries or with the leadership from above or the question and coaching or anything, but you know, they just assume, well, that Drew's back, everything's going to be just the same. Clearly there are other issues in New Orleans that are kind of clouding everything.
Well, there's a lot of facets to a football team, and the idea, listen, I know this is a quarterback driven league, but he's not supposed to do everything, and we saw what happened last year when a team not only builds his offense, John, but its defense and special teams to a degree around one person, and they lose them. That was the Colts last year.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the fact that they lost Peyton Manning. It was the fact that what they had become with Peyton Manning, whereas they relied on him so much to put points on the board, and that defense relied on him so much to put points on the board because they weren't very good at stopping the run. Let's get up 14-0. Let's get up 21-0. Okay, the other team won't run anymore. Turned Mathis and Freeney loose. Sack, strip, get the ball back, make it 28-0. They're not going to run on us, et cetera, et cetera. If you base your game plan all on one team and don't have options, when you lose that one guy, that's how you go 2-14.
Yeah.
I seem to recall 4 years ago a team losing a pretty good quarterback. They went 11-5.
Yeah, that's right here in New England. That's true. There are the night games, Sunday night, Monday night, 4-2-1 teams. They all happen to be NFC teams, which I think does speak a little bit to the strength of the NFC, maybe in regards to comparison with the AFC. But Giants-Eagles on Sunday, Bears-Cowboys on Monday. Who's the best of the four?
I think the Giants are still probably the best of the four. The Eagles are hard to get a grasp on, and that's pun intended, because getting a grasp has been a problem for the Eagles this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when you have 12 turnovers in three games and the rest of your division rivals combined have 12 turnovers, that's not the kind of balance you're looking for.
No, it's not. In fact, you know, when you look at it that way, it's amazing that they've won a couple of games already.
Yeah, well, because it shows you how talented they truly are, but it also shows you on this hit-or-miss way they are playing football. Let's score a touchdown, and if we don't score a touchdown, you've got a really good chance that you'll score a touchdown because of us.
Right.
Okay? I mean, let's not forget, when they played the Browns' offense never reached the end zone. But Quell Jackson wound up running back a Michael Vick interception for a score. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Last week, James Sanders picks up a Michael Vick fumble and returns score. So Michael Vick is spreading the ball and the wealth around a little more than you would hope. But I will say this. They went from 5-4 to 3 turnovers. Logic says they only turned it over twice against the Giants.
Okay, fair enough. That does bring us full circle back to our game, Buffalo at home against the Patriots. And I have to admit that there's a little bit of irony involved here. As I started kind of looking at some of the facts and figures, which I know you probably already poured over yourself. But fact of the matter is that Patriots haven't lost three games in a row in almost a decade. And that's about the same amount of time that the Patriots went without losing to Buffalo until last year. And then Buffalo got off to Schneid and beat the Patriots for the first time in 15 games last year in Buffalo. You know, it's always said, Russell, that quite frankly, you never really can carry over from 1 year to the next or 1 year's performance to the next, and you're facing the same team 2 years in a row. But I'm wondering if the fact that Buffalo won last year against New England doesn't at least give the veterans on that team confidence to know that, you know, hey, we can do it again. And I'm wondering if that might not be enough to keep them in the game for a while.
Well, I think you nailed it, to be honest with you. And it just shows you this is – in some ways, this is the fun part of the NFL. John, let's go back to week one. Patriots go to Tennessee and roll the Titans.
Yep.
Buffalo finds itself down 41-7, eventually loses 48-28. Mario Williams, nowhere to be found.
Right, right.
Okay? Oh, my goodness. Oh, all that money they spent. Oh, it's a disaster. After 1 week. Now, flash forward a couple weeks, the Bills have won two in a row, and the Patriots have lost two in a row.
Right.
And that's why there's that rule where you have to play all the games. Comes in very, very handy. It's going to be interesting. The Bills in the last 2 weeks have accumulated 9 sacks, and I want to say 7 of them are actually from their starting front four,
okay,
led by Kyle Williams. This is why they spent the money. This is why they went out and got Mario Williams and took Mark Anderson from the Patriots, was these games against Tom Brady, who they have had. Let me see. Would you say a lack of success against?
Yes.
I believe the record is 18-2.
Yes.
46 touchdowns, 17 picks, and 4 of the 17 picks, as we know, came in that game last year in week 3.
Mm-hmm.
So he has lit them up, to say the least. What I'm going to be fascinated to watch in this game is to see who gets off to the good start. You will remember that last year in week 3, New England opened up 21-0. And wound up losing the game.
Yes.
I think people forget that in the season finale last year, Buffalo opened up 21-0.
Yes, and lost.
49-21.
Mm-hmm.
They went into the offseason having given up 49 consecutive points. Not the way you want to say, hence, let's go out and do something about our defense. Why do the Giants keep on beating the New England Patriots? Because of their front four and what they do to Tom Brady.
Right.
Let's see if we can do the same thing. And I think, you know, this is a huge game for Buffalo because I think they're feeling better about themselves after the shaky start against the Jets. A lot of that was Ryan Fitzpatrick, obviously, but a lot of it was also that inability to put any pressure on. But again, 5 sacks against the Chiefs, 4 against the Browns. You know, it does bother me that New England gave up as many yards as they did last week. But I see your theory where you're going here.
But you don't agree with it.
No. I know exactly what you mean. What happens a lot of time when you end losing streaks like they did,
yeah,
where they had lost 15 in a row,
yeah,
is that suddenly you get your confidence back. And be honest with you, I don't know how much of that confidence they turned around and lost after they lost that 49-21 game. I'll be interested to see their health at running back this week because that's essential for them. Ryan Fitzpatrick had his problems against the he didn't have the greatest of games last year. You know, early on he threw some interceptions against New England, which is part of the reason they got in the hole. You know, Drayton Florence's return for interception was a big part of the Bills' comeback. You know, to me, New England's still the bully. And, you know, Buffalo's going to have to show to me that they're closer to doing what they did last year in rallying and not closer to what they did last year. Because here's the bottom line. They wound up giving up 31 points. They gave up 80 points to the Patriots in 2 games last year.
Mm-hmm.
80. Not 60 or 40, 80. And I'm not saying the Patriots are going to score 80 this week, but I have to see the Bills do it again. And this battle up front, I mean, this is, like I said, this is a huge game for Buffalo because this is what they have built their team on now.
Right.
And if Mario Williams and Kyle Williams and you know, Mark Anderson – Marcell Dareus don't do the job on Sunday, I think they're going to feel this loss a lot harder. So I'm going to lean toward the Patriots here because I expect them to rebound. I mean, there's a reason they haven't lost 3 games in a row in 10 years because they know how to bounce back after tough losses. They've lost a 2-point game. They've lost a 1-point game.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to give New England the benefit of the doubt more than anything else.
You had tweeted just before we started talking, in fact, that Brady has one or more touchdown passes in 35 straight regular season games dating back to 2009, which, by the way, is the fourth longest streak in NFL history. Safe to say that that streak continues?
Yeah, I think it will. And it's funny because the other streak, we talked earlier about New Orleans and Green Bay. It's a week of tying a record for Drew Brees. He's done 46, and one of the records that a lot of people thought would never be broken, he has a chance to do it at Lambeau Field and tie it. And that's throw his 47th straight touchdown pass. So we'll be watching Brees and Brady, like we do all the time anyway, get to some serious milestones here.
Good stuff as always. Russell, thank you so much for your Thursday chats, your wonderful amount of knowledge, and enjoy the games this weekend. We'll try it again next Thursday. See if we can get it right.
Yes, I am at your beck and call. And as they say, beck seven, call nothing.
I might have to steal that one. Thanks.
Okay, I'll see if I can get a spread on you for that as well.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, Russell. Talk to you soon.
You got it, John.
Okay, Russell Baxter. ProFootballGuru.com, Bleacher Report, also ColdHardFootballFacts.com. He joins us in the playbook every Thursday to run through the NFL and take a good, solid, close, even special look at the Patriots and their opponent for the week, which happens to be Buffalo. Let's pause here for the timeout. Then we need to get to your predictions for the game. How's it going to turn out on Sunday in upstate New York? Web radio at Patriots.com. The Ace Ticket Hotline is open, 508-298-0398. Facebook at John.Rook or Twitter at JRook0722. And go.
Hey, it's Rob Gronkowski, Pat's tight end and big-time Duncan fan. The secret to my success? Coach drew up a play called Gronk, run downfield, catch ball out of air, and we give you freshly made bakery sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. I say Coach is a genius.
No defense keeps Gronk from his freshly made bakery sandwiches. Hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab your go-to sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
I love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012, Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is teaming up with Bridgestone Tires for an offer that's going to make you and your family very excited. Now through September 30th, when you buy four select Bridgestone Tires at Sullivan Tire, you could receive a $70 American Express gift card or your very own Wii gaming system the whole family will love. See SullivanTire.com. Offer valid August 27th through September 30th, 2012. Mail-in claim form required. Cards issued by American Express Prepaid Card Management Corporation. Wii systems given away on behalf of Bridgestone America. Nintendo is not affiliated with this promotion. Certain limitations apply.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
Verizon Fios is America's fastest internet. How fast is that? Faster than Patriots linebacker Gerard Mayo can take down a quarterback, a running back, tight end, or an offensive lineman who just got in the way. In fact, Verizon Fios internet is more than twice as fast as anything you've ever seen. And that means Patriots scores, videos, highlights, and more right when you want them. Fios is built to support multiple devices simultaneously with a constant stream of your favorite Patriots content. And that means you get Gerard Mayo's sacks at Gerard Mayo's speed.
Now that's fast.
Welcome to a world of football where and when you want it. Welcome to Life on Fios, proud sponsor of the New England Patriots. Fios available in select areas. Internet speeds up to 300 down and 65 up megabits per second available.
This is Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio. Want to get inside the playbook? Call John on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398 or email the show at webradio@patriots.com.
Back in the playbook for our final 10 minutes before we get back off yet again to some more good programming coming up here on Patriots.com Radio, and the fact that we have Bill and Todd and Football Nation right around the corner. In the meantime, we've had a rather newsworthy, eventful Thursday in the playbook. We began the program with the breaking news that Kellen Winslow had asked for and apparently received his release by the Patriots after just one game, literally four snaps of the football that he was in the game for on Sunday night against Baltimore at about $12,000 per snap. It's about what it came down to. The team still has not yet made that an official team announcement, but that has been reported by several sources now, including our original reporting source, which was Adam Schefter of ESPN. So we began with that one, and then, of course, the story that came about just a short while ago as well is that we had reported not only here but by Patriots Football Weekly and some other outlets that Patriots owner Robert Kraft is one of the nominees for the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2013. He's in a group of 127 nominees, however, who have been nominated this year as a contributor to the NFL, obviously a non-player, but a contributor to the NFL. Other Patriots, by the way, who were among the nominees for the class of 2013, defensive lineman Ted Washington, quarterback Drew Bledsoe, receiver Stanley Morgan, tight end Ben Coates, defensive lineman Fred Smirlus, and coach Bill Parcells. Now, if you were wondering how this all goes about, the Hall of Fame Selection Committee is going to choose 25 candidates who will then advance into the semifinal round. That list of 25 will be narrowed to what they call 15 modern era finalists later this fall. And then they'll have the voting on those 15 that will take place in February. And then, you know, which is right before the Super Bowl. And so anywhere from, say, 4 to 7 or so new members will ultimately be selected. So, yeah, it's great to be nominated, but there's still a long way to go. Still a long way to go. Nevertheless, worthy, deserving for Mr. Kraft. And then, of course, the whole story with Kellen Winslow after just one game with the Patriots, he's out as well. So at least we're led to believe so. He wasn't at practice today. And, again, all the reports are that he asked for his release, and the Patriots gave it to him. Now let's get to your thoughts on the game as well. Some emails here coming in. Sean from Vancouver, British Columbia says, John, what's going on with Rasai Dowling? He was on the field but didn't make any noticeable plays, good or bad, on Sunday night. Moore and Cole played more in the fourth quarter. The only thing I can tell you about Dowling is that he just isn't progressing the way that I think the coaching staff had hoped. If you've listened to this program at all over the course of the last year plus, you've known that I have not been a big Dowling fan. I thought in college that he was too injury prone. But the Patriots obviously saw something in him and his athletic ability that if he could stay healthy, well, you know, he could end up being one of those larger sized cornerbacks at 6'1", 6'2", 6'3", I think 6'1", is his actual size, that he could end up going up against and providing, some pretty good coverage against some of the larger receivers that are out there in the game today. And yet, he just hasn't been able to stay healthy. And so now you're looking at him and a guy like Shane Vereen as well, who were 2 second-round draft picks for the Patriots. They can't stay healthy long enough to get on the field. Really, what good are they doing? What good are they? What good are they doing the team? Nothing. Rasai's going to show me he can stay healthy. He can't do that yet. So I guess until he can actually get out on the field and show what he can do for any extended period of time, can't imagine he's got much of a future, to be quite honest with you. I've always thought he's a little bit too upright of a player anyway. He looked to be a little bit stiff out there. Jake says, just heard the commercial for Verizon, and the girl is talking about her fantasy team and that she knew how to start Mayo. How do you start Mayo in fantasy football?
That's a great point. I always wondered that myself. Some leagues you have to pick, like, one defensive player.
Right.
There are some, like, scattered leagues, but most leagues, you know, you don't have to pick any defensive
players. I thought you just kind of picked an entire defense as a whole,
right? Yeah, you pick an entire defense. You're exactly right.
Okay. He also said, have you seen Dennard play? Is he potentially another bust? I can't put him in the category of Dowling because, first of all, he wasn't a high draft pick. He was a low draft pick, number one. He could have been a high draft pick, if not for some off-the-field issues that he had at Nebraska. And we'll just leave it at that. You can Google it and find it out for yourself if you don't know. And, yes, I think there are some injury problems with him, but I think they're willing to let him stick around a little bit more because the investment isn't as large in a guy like Dennard as it is in Dowling. Mark from Cheddar. I want your opinion on something. Maybe it's just me being a complete homer, and if it is, please say so. But there's a lot of stuff about Belichick and his grabbing of the ref, and rightly so. He crossed a line and deserves a fine, but I don't think it's a suspension. And in my view, there was no threat of violence at all. Now onto the bit that should be mentioned more. After Harbaugh was flagged in the fourth quarter, they showed him on the sideline. He was doing the universal sign for you, me, let's go, put him up right now. It wasn't, come over, I want to talk. It was, I want to punch you in the face. Personally, I thought that threatened a lot more violence than what Belichick did when he grabbed the arm. Is it me being a total homer, or did you think the exact same thing about Harbaugh's actions? I thought the exact same thing about Harbaugh's actions, and Eric and I talked about that yesterday here in the playbook, and it just is largely gone unnoticed and untalked about by the nation's media. I'm sure it has everything to do with touching. Now, I did not see Harbaugh touch the official. That's all I can tell you. I didn't see it. I've been told that he did and he didn't, both. So I didn't see it, so I can't make a real comment on it. But I do wonder why more isn't said about this. So, no, I don't think you're being overdramatic here. Daryl says, John, yesterday you mentioned a difference between the Pats' ability to close out the second quarter as opposed to the Pats' inability to close out the fourth. I have a theory. If you think about it, when closing out the half, usually a team has to go full speed and sling it. Whereas to close out a fourth quarter, rarely does a team ever go full speed. Fundamentally, the two situations have completely different goals. At the end of the half, the team is desperately trying to score, while at the end of the game, the team is usually trying to just run out the clock. Therein lies the problem. Look at the Super Bowls. Both required a drive against the clock for a field goal. Look at the Pats' last scoring drive at the end of Super Bowl 42. Same scenario, except they needed and got a touchdown. To me, the problem that the Patriots have had recently with closing out games is because the Pats are at their best when Brady's going full speed playing for the win. When they just try to burn up the clock, they're not really playing to win. They're just playing not to lose. And unfortunately for both of us and them, the more they play not to lose, the more it seems to happen. It's a very good point, Daryl. I can't disagree with it. I think you're right, and I think that's a fundamental problem with just about any team, you know, that's trying to do the same things that the Patriots are doing. You tend to slack up a little bit because the intention is to, well, let's get the clock rolling here without really just playing football, without regards to how much time is left in the game. That's really what you should do. I think too many teams are too scared to do that. Josh from Charlottesville, Virginia. What's up, John? When I told you last week I hadn't emailed since last season, you asked me where I've been. It inspired me to email in as often as I used to. Thank you, Josh. First off, I'd like to address the Winslow situation. I don't think there was much drama involved here. I think he just wanted a chance to jump into a more permanent position on someone else's roster before it got much later in the season. Who knows? It may very well have something to do with playing through his injury and not wanting to deal anymore. Or it could even be over the grief he may or may not have gotten when he dropped his first pass, but he did make some great money. On another note, I'd like to go ahead and make my game day prediction. I'm calling Patriots 37-17. Interesting. Okay. Josh, thank you. Joe in Michigan. John, it's prediction Thursday. I'm giving it another try. Obviously, I was wrong last week. I predicted 27-24 Pats. It ended with a field goal like I thought it would, though. Anyway, this week, I think the Patriots start rolling. They're mad as hell. They're going to take it out on Buffalo big time. My prediction, Patriots 36, Bills 20. Brady will bring his pinpoint precision to throw three touchdowns, one to Gronk, one to Branch, one to Lloyd. Ridley rushes in for another. Gostkowski hits two field goals. Defense forces a safety. Woo! And then the Jets lose to the 49ers. Dolphins lose to the Cardinals, bringing the division to a three-way tie. I actually kind of look at all those scenarios, Joe, in Michigan, and sort of agree. But then I could be called a homer. D in Maine says, one word on the regular refs coming back. Yeah! Bleeping who? Never so happy to see a ref in a football game. I think that's probably a universal opinion, D. But I wonder how long it's going to be before we hear boos. I'm going to give them a call. Maybe two. Tonight in the Thursday night game before you start to hear boos. And like I said earlier in the program, I really think it'd be funny as hell if we, you know, the officials are out on the field for the coin toss or whatever and we hear boos. First time the referee's mic is open and Gene Steratore opens his mouth and we hear boos. I think that would just be excellent. All right, Major Tony says, well, we have no more easy scapegoats to hang our defects on. If we couldn't stop the Ravens running game, then one could make the case that Buffalo can run on us, too. The ease at which we gave up yards to Rice was eye-popping. I expect our secondary to give up plays, so what makes the difference here? Is the Bills' O-line worse? Fitzpatrick not credible like Flacco was? I think we can win this game, but we have open sores to cover up and mend. If they can run and pass on us, it's a long day. Now we have Mankins in doubt with a pair of good pass rushers. It just adds fuel to the fire. This is a guts game. If we have it, we can win. I expect a far different reception committee for Spiller than Rice got. The Bills receivers are not up to the stature of the Ravens, in my opinion, but neither is Fitzpatrick, especially if we get pressure with four. And he says Patriots 24, Bills 17. And yes, we still don't know whether either Spiller, who's more doubtful, even Fred Jackson, who appears to be some question as to whether or not he'll suit up or even play a lot on Sunday. I think he'll probably be there. Chad Rook, finally the real refs are back, and it just proves that the NFL Mafia headquarters and some money-grubbing owners are absolute rats. I'll be a bit long, but He says, I'm confident for this weekend. The team showed us they can play on the road in a tough environment and displayed a lot of mental toughness in New England's front seven is for real. He says, Pats 35, Bills 14, close game, but by the third quarter, the Bills crumble, and Pats come out on top. All right, Chad, excellent. I will wrap it up then here with a couple of Facebook posts that have come in. Tim says, with Mankins, 34-17, without Mankins, 27-20. He's easily worth a shortened drive that gives a field goal the other way. Axel says, prediction 34-21 Pats. The offense will come out firing on all cylinders. The Bills will score in garbage time. And he says, on a more positive note, the real refs are back. And he says, even though the replacement refs were bad, I can't help but feel a bit sad for them. They were regular guys and probably saw this as a dream opportunity and perhaps hoped to be signed as a full-time ref. Now it'll never happen. I just feel a bit sad for them. And I actually think, Axel, that's probably how we'll look back on them in another 10 to 20 years, kind of like we look back at the replacement players from the 87 strike in the NFL. I think we'll look back on them somewhat fondly in that regard. Guys just trying to do a job and realize a dream. Chris says, Pats 27, Bills 20. Brian says, Patriots roll, scoring 49 to the Bills 21. Thanks for coming into the playbook today, everybody. Thank you, Mark Gaughan from the Buffalo News, Eric Scalavino, Patriots Football Weekly, Russell Baxter, ProFootballGuru.com, as he always does here in the playbook. Stick around there. There's much more football coming up. It's Football Nation with Bill and Todd. Same patch time, same patch channel next Tuesday. We'll nitpick it all, won't we? See ya.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.